Good morning. It's time for another Red River Radio Spotlight. I'm Kermit Poling, and I think a lot of you who are also film buffs, in addition to being music fans, will recall the scene of a very pale Mozart in bed, dying, trying to scrape out the last notes of his final work that he composed, with his nemesis Antonio Salieri sitting across the bed, taking what we call musical dictation, writing down every note. And you probably recall that scene as it got towards the end of the film Amadeus. Well, however unlikely that scenario might have been, the work that it represents at the end of that film, The Requiem, is a monumental work, and one with a rather interesting and unusual background, in that Mozart never completed the work, and there are still some historical controversy as to who actually finished the work and when it was completed, and what Mozart's widow did, Costanza, trying to preserve the piece as being a Mozart masterpiece. But in any case, it survives down now into the 21st century as one of the great works for chorus, soloists, and orchestra. The Shreveport Symphony will be performing that work tomorrow evening. That will be at 7:30 p.m. in the Riverview Theater in downtown Shreveport. It is not the only work on that program, and normally Michael Butterman would be here along with me, the music director of the Shreveport Symphony, of course, to discuss the programs in great detail. I will let you know that, of course, the Centenary College Choir and the NSU Chamber Choir are also performing in that work, along with four outstanding vocal soloists. But in addition to the Requiem, there's another work that you probably are not familiar with, by a composer whose name you may recognize, John Lord, especially if you were around in the late 60s. He was the founder of Deep Purple. But after the days of Deep Purple, he went on to become a well-established English composer and performer. And the other featured soloist on tomorrow evening's performance is Catherine Kemmler, who is a professor of flute at LSU in Baton Rouge, and she performs all over the world, quite frequently in England, and has an English connection with this English work that we'll be hearing. And so, Catherine, first of all, welcome to the Red River Radio Studios.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
And I would say, since so many people are familiar with the Mozart, let's talk about this John Lord piece and how you came to discover it.
Well, I had never actually heard of the piece until Michael Butterman asked if I would do this on this concert. And so I looked it up online, listened to it, and said, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And but I also decided that it would be a good idea for me to buy the CD. There is only one recording of the piece in which actually John Lord is at the keyboard himself.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And the flutist is a Scottish flutist, I believe, who plays on there, and it's a live performance CD. So I went to John Lord's website and I purchased the CD, and when it arrived in the mail and I started reading the little booklet that came with the CD, I was really surprised because I found that I had a much stronger connection to the piece than I realized. In the little booklet, John Lord wrote about how this music came out of some music that he had written for some shows with a certain actor, barrister, playwright, author named Sir John Mortimer, and mentioned also that in these shows, he had worked with a flutist, or flautist, as they say in England. They're not being pretentious, that's just how they say it, flautist. Yes. And named Clive Conway. And it turns out that Clive Conway is one of my very dearest, best flautist friends in England. And I'd actually met him in 1982 when I was over there. And later, Clive started the Oxford Flute Summer School and had invited me to come teach there in 1990. And I've been doing it every other summer ever since. And I'm actually going to be doing it
This summer as well.
And but so when I read all this and saw Clive's name, I knew that Clive had started something called Clive Conway Productions, where he had this great idea that he was going to combine music with words by having actors speak words, either poetry or written dialogue or whatever, with music either going on simultaneously or in between. And this was what Clive Conway Productions was all about. And so when I saw his name, I said, Clive, was this these shows with Sir John Mortimer, was this part of your Clive Conway Productions? And he said, yes, that he used Sir John Mortimer along with many famous British actresses who were, let's say, of a certain age, because many of them, for example, some of you might be familiar with Jean Marsh, who had been on the famous series Upstairs, Downstairs. But when she retired from that, and a lot of other actresses with similar careers, like in soap operas or other shows, who weren't being called quite as frequently, they were available. And so Clive started hiring them to do these shows. So it was Sir John Mortimer, along with a bevy of rotating actresses, British actresses, in this show that was called Mortimer's Miscellany. And they also used a pianist named Christine Croshaw, who was another one of my very dear friends, who did a BBC broadcast with me and many other concerts in England. And she was also part of this. When they started doing more charity productions, John Lord, who had by this time stepped down from Deep Purple and who was a very close friend with Sir John Mortimer, stepped in for the charity productions to play the keyboard for those. And he asked if it would be okay if he wrote some pieces to go along with these shows, curtain up pieces, curtain down pieces.
Right.
And so he did, he actually wrote three pieces, which Clive, my friend Clive Conway, played with these shows. And then when Sir John Mortimer passed away, he was asked, John Lord was asked to was commissioned to write a piece for flute, piano, and strings. But it was a very short time frame, and at first he said he thought he was going to turn it down because he was afraid he wouldn't have enough time to write this. But then he remembered that he had these three pieces already written.
Right.
And he was in mourning for his dear friend Sir John Mortimer, and he decided, okay, well, I'm going to write this suite, starting with these three pieces, and make it a tribute to Sir John. And that's how the piece came about, and it's quite a long piece. It's 25 minutes, and it's all supposed to represent John Mortimer's personality, his life. There's even a movement called The Winter of a Dormouse, which is sort of was, I guess, inspired from a book that Sir John Mortimer wrote called The Summer of a Dormouse, How to Age Ungracefully, because he was having some health issues and so on. Movement is supposed to represent the end of his life. And there's a huge flute cadenza at the end that is supposed to express Sir John pleading, crying, screaming, maybe.
So this is really reflective work.
Yes.
And I've wondered, you know, to notice such things as the title. What do you feel that specifically refers to?
I think it comes perhaps from a poem by Thomas Hardy, and there are other little notations in parts of the music where he just writes some words, and I think some of those words might also come from Thomas Hardy's poetry. I'm not certain. I know that the final movement of the piece called Afterwards, there's a version of it that I found sort of accidentally online when I was searching for my piece, that where there's you hear the same melodies that are in the last movement, but then there's all these, this poetry that's being recited by a famous British actor whose name is escaping me at the moment, but it'll come to me in a few minutes.
Okay, that's all right.
And it's all based on Thomas Hardy's poetry.
Sure. Flute concertos or flute works with orchestra don't get quite the press and aren't quite as common as, you know, your typical piano concerto, violin concerto. And yet the flute is a tremendously expressive instrument and capable of doing a lot. There's a lot of music, obviously, 20th century, 21st century, that's written for it. And my understanding is that you do specialize a lot in this type of thing. And you were, before we got on the air, doing a little demo of a piece that I think would be quite unexpected for the average person to think, oh, here's a flute piece. And so I was wondering if you would first describe it a little bit and then play a little bit so we can hear it.
Okay. Well, this I've been very interested in music that uses, for the flute, something called extended techniques, and that is where you use techniques that you wouldn't hear in normal flute playing, such as singing and playing, multiphonics, and that sort of thing. And this piece that I'm going to play in a little excerpt from in just a minute is called Three Beats for Beatbox Flute by Greg Patillo. Greg Patillo is a classically trained flutist from Seattle who went to the Cleveland Institute of Music, and after he graduated, he moved to New York City, and like many musicians who moved to New York City, he didn't really have a job in music, so he mm-hmm. went to the streets to play, and while he was doing that, he developed a technique where you combine the sounds of beatboxing, which is where you make percussive sounds with your mouth, like that, and and you combine that with flute playing, and someone did a video of him and put it on YouTube, and it went viral. And now he's really famous. I mean, he's invited to play at all the national flute conventions and flute festivals all over the world, and he plays concerts all over the world with a group of his called Project Trio. And it's just really great. Well, in 2011, he was commissioned to write a piece for the high school competition at the National Flute Convention in that year. And so he wrote these three beats for beatbox flute. Well, because I have such an interest in contemporary music and I thought this stuff sounded really cool, I decided that, you know, I should learn this, you know, just in case my flute students wanted to do it. Well, I was really amazed at how difficult it was for me, because even though I had done a lot of extended techniques, the beatbox thing was totally not
sure.
It was something I was used to. It took me a long time to learn it, but I learned all three movements. I did it on my faculty recital at LSU on February 9th. I actually went to New York over the Christmas break and had a lesson with Mr. Greg Patillo himself, who was very nice and very encouraging and very helpful, and impressed that a woman of my age would be working on this and learning this whole piece. So that's how it came about.
Okay. All right. So beatboxing flute, which we're going to hear now. This is Catherine Kemmler, who's a faculty at LSU, also the soloist tomorrow evening with the Shreveport Symphony Orchestra. Go ahead and...
Okay. And this is comes from the third beat of the piece.
Catherine Kemmler, I can see why high school students would love that piece. The third beat from, is it three beats? Three beats
for beatbox flute.
For beatbox flute. Mm-hmm. So there you go. That will not be the piece that Catherine will be playing tomorrow evening, but she will be playing a contemporary work by John Lord. who is the founder of Deep Purple. That's on a concert that also features the Requiem of Mozart, along with the Centenary College Choir and the NSU Chamber Choir. The soloists in the Requiem are soprano Jane Redding, mezzo-soprano Lauren McNeese, John Viscardi on tenor, Grant Youngblood on baritone, and Michael Butterman, the music director of the Shreveport Symphony, will be conducting that concert. Information about the concert is available online at shreveportsymphony.com. You can also call 318-227-8863. That's 227-TUNE. And Catherine, I want to thank you so much for coming and being on the air. We miss Michael, but I understand he had a conflict this morning that couldn't be avoided. So, but he'll be at the concert. You'll be at the concert, and I can't wait to hear it. So, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.